And so we're going to talk about the CS Principles Curriculum Framework. And it's this. So we printed out these yesterday. It's 129 pages where they try and distill everything about the course into one booklet. And Nacho, can I get your help to pass these out? This is, I think, really, I mean, this is the core of what we're trying to do, is to map to this. And it's a tall order. There's a lot of information here to digest. And part of this offering is creating a package that leaves you confident knowing that everything is here. This has, and as I think I mentioned, this came out, this released version came out yesterday. So I just skimmed it quickly. It has 22 sample exam questions. It has some extra information about ways you might feel comfortable teaching the class. Certainly don't feel like you have to pore over this now. In fact, I would not recommend it if you want to stay awake. It can be a little dry. But I do want to make sure everybody has a copy for their own use later. But yeah, this is what we're trying to map to, and this is what we have to, what the College Board is telling us is this is going to be the exam. This is what the topics are going to be covered on the exam. And so I want to talk about how we in CS50 make that happen. So when you go through this book, which again, you don't have to do now. In fact, I wouldn't recommend it. You'll find that there are a lot of different things inside of these pages. You'll know that there are 7 big ideas. So the Computer Science Principles Framework is about creating a more well-rounded consumer of technology so that someone can understand and interpret technological things they read or hear and have a foundation to be able to discuss those intelligently. And those boil down to 7 big ideas, which we'll go through shortly. Inside of those big ideas are enduring understandings. These are the takeaways that students really need to walk away with. And actually, I think in light of this revision, there are now 25. So these numbers are a teeny bit out of date, but not very much. Within those, there are 44 learning objectives and 312 essential knowledge statements. And we're certainly not going to get into the nitty-gritty of how we hit every single one of those. But these are basically, in terms of the larger understandings required of students, these are the really fine grains. So there's a lot of detail here. And because of this framework, there's a lot of different ways that curricula can approach this. And I'm sure in your research you've seen that there are several other curricula who will implement this in different ways if you go to their, you look through their PD materials. And so, as in the nature of a framework, there's a lot of bulletin level stuff. Outside of the big ideas are things called computational thinking practices. So this is not so much what a student takes away from the course in terms of knowledge, but in terms of best practices when dealing with computing. So these are going to be things like collaboration and communication. How do they discuss computing-related matters among one another? How do they work together in teams or groups? As part of the curriculum framework, there are 2 through course assessments, Create and Explore, which we talked about quite a bit in the last session. Explore is a writing-based assignment where students will investigate technologies of interest to them, generally going to be current events related, and try and prepare a report and comment on that technology, its social implications, try and give a well-rounded assessment for somebody who, the assumption that we always make is, imagine you're telling somebody who has absolutely no idea what you're talking about something. How do you discuss it with them intelligently, but not too technically, such that it would require background. You want to provide the introduction to this and talk about the good, the bad, the ugly about it. Yes?
How large or long of a document do they have to produce?
It's not terribly long. It's a couple pages, really. Or there's also, you can also produce a video. There is a writing component, but it's not solely writing based. And the Explore task requires 8 hours of in-class time, and that's built in around the halfway point of the course for students to conduct independent research. The writing, it's a couple hundred words. I think all told, it's 750 words, but you're also answering some specific questions and producing a 60 to 90 second video about your technology. So it's not terribly intensive. The writing assignments that we provide as recommended problems as you go are longer than the Explore task, so that students do not feel overwhelmed when they get to the Explore task. It's sort of a relief when they get to the Explore task. It's not as much. The next is Create, which is the equivalent of the final project. This requires 12 hours of in-class time, built in again near the end of the semester after students have had exposure to all of the different aspects of the curriculum. And this is an opportunity for students to pursue their own academic interests. As was discussed a little bit over lunch, there were some conversations about this. You don't actually submit code as part of this exercise to the College Board. You submit a PDF of code, so the code will never run. And that can be kind of deflating, and that's why we still keep the CS50 fair at the end, so that students can demo this project that they put so much time and effort into.
Don't you have to submit a video?
You have a video describing your technology, yes, but no one will actually run.
Right.
No one will run the program, but they'll see the program running in a video form. I think it's a 2-minute video, might be even 1-minute video, where they discuss their and there's again questions that get answered there, just like in the explore task. There's certain targeted questions to answer as well.
And we can still require the code.
Oh, absolutely. I would recommend it, actually. No. But yeah, you can certainly go above and beyond what they're expecting. And as you'll see, some of our curriculum definitely overmaps what is expected and of the computer science principles framework as well. And then lastly, there's now a date. The AP exam is a multiple choice exam. It's May 5th, 2017. And that will be the first ever CS Principles exam. So that's the target date, May 5th, 2017. So as I mentioned, there are 7 big ideas that are at the core of this framework. The first of them is creativity. So with respect to creativity, students are asked to use the tools and techniques of computer science to create interesting and relevant artifacts enhanced by their computation. Students will do this a lot. Students will be presented with many different problems, of which there is basically an infinite number of different ways to solve it. And I promise you that every year I teach this class, I see one I've never seen before. And students, particularly even as early as Scratch, will create some really cool things that just interest them. It's an opportunity to pursue an approach to a problem without necessarily following a specifically defined rubric. There's always a different way to do something, and creativity is sort of something that will permeate throughout this curriculum, is the opportunity for students to be creative. Abstraction. David mentioned abstractions quite a bit in his opening session, how many different layers of abstractions there are. Over the course of CS50 AP and Computer Science Principles more broadly, it is our goal to explore those abstractions. How do we layer binary numbers, and on top of that we have ASCII, on top of that we have colors. These are all different abstractions that we've used. Even in our pseudocode, we can say something like, open the left half of the book. That's an abstraction for many other steps inside of it of, you know, turn pages many, many times. You're abstracting away the idea of opening to the left half of the book, which is itself a loop of going back -1 page n times until you get halfway. And so students will, over the course of this course and other CS principles, encounter all of these different abstractions and learn to create their own abstractions and work with abstractions provided by others, libraries, SDKs, et cetera, et cetera. Data and information. So part of this is understanding what data and information is, and hopefully coming to the realization that just about everything is data and information, and there are ways to process it. So students may process very small text strings. They may process huge data sets and try and put them into databases. It's about how to work with those pieces of data. Algorithms are, of course, the primary way in which we do that, and so as you'll see in a minute, generally, when we consider how we organize hierarchically all of these big ideas, data and information is considered a subset of abstraction of algorithms, because algorithms operate on data, and so we usually consider it through that lens as we go. Programming is big idea number 5. Now, what sets this particular implementation apart from others is that ours is very programming intensive. We use programming as a means to an end to cover everything else. That's what we have come to the conclusion that is the way we want to tackle this. Programming is an important skill. There are often, beyond the introductory courses, there are other programming courses, and so we want to introduce students to a text-based programming environment as soon as they are comfortable doing so, so that they are well served to go on to other computer science courses or to careers in computer science as well. The internet. So this is a bit different from a lot of the previous computer science courses that are more common nowadays is we take a lot of time to explore the internet, not just in terms of web-based programming, which we of course do, but also in terms of how it is constructed. What is a router? What is the internet protocol? What is DNS? Trying to have students be able to speak about these things that they're reading about and hearing about. And when they see something about encryption, why does that matter? Or when they hear about a cyber attack or somebody's getting DDoSed, can they explain what it means to be DDoSed? Can they explain what a cyber attack is and how to defend against cyber attacks? That's all part of what we're trying to teach here. And then lastly, global impact. Global impact is among the trickiest aspects of computer science principles to discuss because there just hasn't been a lot of investigation into it. And so a lot of the implementing curricula there's been investigation into it, but not in terms of in a computer science course. And so we're really trying to get students to think about what is happening in the news and what is happening and why the Apple FBI thing is so interesting and why is that such engaging them in that conversation as something we're doing in the classroom, as opposed to just something they're hearing about on TV and having their opinion shaped by media. We want them to have their opinion shaped by their own knowledge coming in as well. And so students should become familiar with the ways in which computing enables innovation and analyze pros and cons. And they'll do this a lot in the writing assignments. This will come through in the explore task as well. So these are the seven big ideas of the computer science principles framework. And this is sort of how we hierarchically consider our approach to them in CS50 AP. So like I said, everything begins through the lens of programming. That's the way we approach every problem to give students a consistent entry point. Once they're familiar with programming, they can use that base knowledge to move into these different areas. So from programming, we can go to abstraction. We can talk about different search algorithms, sorting algorithms, encoding schemes, ASCII, binary, decimal numbers, hexadecimal numbers, all these human-created abstractions that we use to describe things, how loops are really just a bunch of low-level statements, assembly-level statements. We talk about the differences between object code, machine code, assembly language, higher-level programming languages than C, just so they can get a sense of how far things have come. Obviously, working with C, we're pretty low level. We're pretty deep in the trenches here when we're talking about programming in C, but it affords us the opportunity to talk about things like memory management that many programming languages now abstract away. And so now we can talk about what is RAM and why do we care about how many bytes something takes up on a system? Because there was a time when we did care about that. And being able to understand what one gigabyte of RAM is and how that is a luxury that, you know, back in the day we maybe had 32 megabytes of RAM and how that has affected our ability to compute and how our computing power has increased. I think the first computer I had a 10 gigabyte hard drive and maybe had 32 megabytes of RAM. But yeah, 1K or less. Talking about even, you know, video games from the early 1990s, how those take up 4K worth of stuff, those games that kids would play forever, and now it's gigabytes and gigabytes. You need 4 DVDs to, you know, install a single game. So being able to talk about memory is a luxury that we are afforded because we are doing this course in C for the most part. Algorithms, of course, there are many algorithms that we know about in computer science, various sorting and searching algorithms, of course, being the canonical examples. But also, we encourage students to come up with their own algorithms. We have an assignment where students are asked to replicate a part of their day algorithmically, sort of similar to the peanut butter and jelly algorithms we tried to come up with, and have somebody try and replicate that, or the drawing example, just explaining that every set of instructions can really boil down to an algorithm, and those set of instructions process data and information. So again, we generally look at data and information through the lens of an algorithm. Creativity, of course, again, permeates everything in the course. It's not really called out explicitly in any way, just sort of weaved in and encouraging students to explore pathways that we might not consider as being the right way to do something, but a way to do something. We don't want to try and force everybody into the same down the same road of solving it this way, solve it your way, and be able to articulate why that way works. Explore a creative process. And this creativity is not necessarily through the lens of programming also. I mean, when you think about the explore and create tasks and the videos they're going to produce, that's creative approach to explaining their own work. And then the internet and global impact, again, I don't want to reiterate too much here, but again, these two go hand in hand in discussing the implications of having this interconnected global society that 25 years ago we didn't, and how things have evolved as a result of being able to get information immediately at your fingertips, and all the implications of those playing together. So that's the very high level. Again, I don't want to get into like EK level 312 detailed things. I don't think anybody wants to do that, but that's the high level approach. Everything is looked at through the lens of programming, and from there we examine those big ideas generally. This is how I've envisioned it anyway. There are certainly deviations from this, but this is, I think, the general top-down approach of CS50AP.
So I don't know if you're going to get into it later. So if so, just tell me. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, in abstraction, it's one thing to expect the kids to kind of to use it and to talk about the concept of abstraction as they use it. Do you then also assess them on this sort of metacognitive level of, can they recognize abstraction? Can they talk about abstraction as a concept? Or is it just that they should recognize it in sight, that when they create a procedure, et cetera, et cetera?
It's both. So when we talk about things like functions, we describe them as abstractions. And there's a writing assignment where they're asked to consider abstractions that they deal with on a daily basis. So it does get metacognitive, but not too deep in the weeds on it. It's really just about understanding that there are abstractions and they work with abstractions every day.
Would you ask them to discuss the concept of abstractions as it applies to something other than computer science, as a comparison or a metaphor?
Can you give me an example of what you're thinking?
Yeah, in other words, words are abstractions. You were kind of headed down that path a minute ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The word desk is an abstraction for an object, that kind of stuff. Or do you just strictly stick with dealing with the abstractions in the code?
I think that the way it's currently framed is we think about it as abstractions through code because we're generally looking through a lens of programming. But I think that these are discussions that happen that naturally would come up in a classroom.
Well, the mobile CSP does have a couple lessons that are explicitly about abstraction, not related to code and other endeavors.
Yeah, and Thriving in a Digital World, I know, does as well. They discuss the abstractions that the English language provides and how we take them for granted when we're trying to describe various things. So we don't get quite into it in that sense. We generally look at it through a programming lens, but I think that is a valuable discussion to have. And it's worth considering. No, I mean, it's worth considering. This curriculum, like we've said, it's the first. We're in a pilot year, and there's evolutions that take place, and your feedback in terms of what works and what doesn't shapes the next steps. So if that's a discussion that proves fruitful in many endeavors, like it's something I would want to include. So thank you. So the other main high-level thing, although the learning objectives and essential knowledge and essential understandings don't fall into this, the learning objectives are tied to one of these, are the computational thinking practices, which again are the best practices that students should come away with, the skills but not necessarily knowledge that they should be leaving the course with. And hopefully I've clearly delineated that distinction, hopefully. So connecting computing. So it's about understanding that as computers become more powerful, they have varying effects on society. The way that computers impacted society 20 years ago is very different from the way that computers impact society now. Being able to draw those connections and discuss those connections is an important takeaway from this course. Creating computational artifacts. This is, of course, core to the fact that the course is programming intensive. Students will create many, many computational artifacts. Computational artifacts being a term I'm not sure I heard too much before I started to read this purple book, at least in that context. But computational artifacts are not just code. They are things like videos, or things like they go onto a website and they upload a song, and that website allows you to remix the song by varying the levels. That's a computational artifact. It is a piece of data created or transformed by computational tools. So it's a very broadly defined concept. We generally, again, look at it through programs that we create, but it's not exclusively programs. It's really anything generated by a computer. So going into your favorite paint program and drawing a smiley face, that's still a computational artifact. It's still data that was created using computing tools, and understanding that these artifacts permeate everything. Abstracting. Students should be using abstractions to develop models and simulations of natural phenomena. So there'll be assignments where they have to test out different things and race them or simulate the effects. One problem that I've been tinkering with is trying to simulate the effects of a pandemic. So varying different parameters, how quickly do things mutate, and trying to use those tools to simulate these things out. But also just being able to generalize notions, generalize things like loops into functions, into different files. Being able to discuss things, not necessarily on a, being able to discuss things on a low level, intermediate levels, high levels, and understanding why, by the end of the course, a language like C, to some, or to at least could be conceived of in certain ways as being inferior to more modern programming languages because PHP or JavaScript have higher level things that they can do, but only inferior depending on the lens through which you're considering it and for what your needs are. Analyzing problems and artifacts. So we spend a lot of time in CS50 talking about algorithmic efficiency. And it's not gonna be covered terribly intensely on the computer science principles exam from what I understand from reading the book, but I think it's a really important takeaway is for students to look at a problem and pick it apart and try and figure out how quickly is this going to solve the problem I'm going for. So being able to analyze something like the phone book problem. So take away computing entirely. How long is it going to take me to read this phone book? Or try to find somebody in a phone book if I'm going one page at a time, two pages at a time, or tearing half the problem at a time. And making sure that they understand that there is a vocabulary that we can use to describe that process. So it's not, it doesn't boil down to, you know, knowing on the AP exam that binary search is a O log N algorithm. Like, that's not a question that I expect to show up. But being able to describe that there is a fundamental difference between binary search and linear search is something that they should be able to do. And they should be able to analyze that problem and see the approach and see its strengths, weaknesses, and limitations.
Do you do much outside of those algorithms? You know, do you look at other algorithms and talk about appropriateness or anything like that? Or is it pretty much with the search and
search? When we're talking, when the course devotes time to discussing the efficiencies of an algorithm, is we do it in the context of that because it's a clear, we can present this nice table, for example, that really delineates it. We do talk about it in the context of recursion a little bit, which is not necessarily a topic that you'll have to dive too deep into in CS principles, and we'll talk about that in a second. It comes up more in, it comes up at later points in the course in CS 50. It doesn't necessarily have to come up at more points in CS principles.
Well, because I was asking, they mentioned evaluate a proposed solution and then justify the appropriateness and correctness of the solution.
Which what are you looking at?
Under analyzing P4. And so, that's one of those things that drives me crazy, and I'm just not sure whether I need to explicitly address that or just when it comes up in context. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I wish I had a good answer, though. These are really good questions. Like, that's... It's really important to stress that that's a great question that I don't have a good answer to because I don't think we've seen yet exactly how they're going to ask that question. We spend a good amount of time talking about it where we think it makes the most sense to talk about it, but there are, we talk about it in Unit 3. You could go back and analyze all the stuff we did before, whether the way we did it was the right way. You could go way ahead and analyze them in the same way. You can analyze solutions to problems that have nothing to do with computer science as well. And how are they going to ask that question? Time will tell, I think. Did you have a question, Mark?
Yeah, I was just going to say, while you're, like, I mean, it seems like you're doing so many things at once here, right? You have this, like, CS50 course that you teach here and elsewhere, and then you're helping us, like, develop a high school course using some of the same materials. I would just, like, hope that, like, if I think it most useful to me would be if it was clear when I'm looking through your materials which ones are directly connected to AP CS principles. Not that that's the only ones I want, but just, and then what roots can, what sort of extra or diverges from that? Even if you think it's core, just to admit that it's not core to this, or, you know what I mean?
So
I might not have as much time.
Yep, so we do call that out.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about that shortly. But we also have mapped everything we do in CS50 to what we believe these objectives are, and we're having it professionally mapped to CSTA standards, to this CS principle standards, and to CTE standards. So we have people working on that right now. And so we have our opinion of it and theirs, and we're reconciling those, seeing where we need to improve it. But every module that we discuss in CS50 AP that you'll see in the wiki has call-outs for this. These are the learning objectives covered by this module, or as we conceive it. And we're also now preparing a list of all of the learning objectives and what modules cover them. Okay, so that mapping is ongoing as we go. But that's obviously, I probably should have led with that. That is obviously very important to understanding that this lines up, is to see exactly how it's going. And so every module has it, and then we'll also have a master document with the reverse to show that every objective is covered by certain modules. Yes? And I believe that those are all in line to be done by mid to late April. Is that?
Yes.
So those are forthcoming, but they're definitely ongoing. The next major practice, and again, just to reiterate, these are tied to learning objectives, so they're not independent things that need to happen. They're interweaved already into the large, big ideas and all of its accordion file levels from there. So communication. So communication is things like what I'm trying to do right now. Communicating verbally, communicating in writing, communicating via video, communicating via comments in your code, trying to explain to others what is happening. Communication takes many different forms. So just being able to discuss with others without having to even look at code, what does this do? What is this issue? How does email work? Just being able to talk about that in some way where you can use technical language or use some technical language, but also describe the basic just back and forth. And collaborating. So again, collaborating is, we have a couple of assignments where we explicitly call it out, and our academic honesty policy deals with collaboration. We talked about students you can show someone else your code, but you can't view theirs. That's one form of collaborating. There's pair programming. There's virtual collaboration via shared workspaces. There's GitHub, which we discuss is a thing, but don't get too deeply into how to use it, because that could be saved for a CSA or CS1 in college course. But just the existence of these different collaborating tools and understanding that there are ways to collaborate that aren't, I'm sitting here and you're sitting here and working together, but also I'm sitting here and you're sitting in Eastern Europe and we're working together. And many different other approaches. So just understanding these activities. And again, the explore task and the create task both permit collaboration. Both students have to submit the assignment. Important thing to remember. But students can collaborate on those and work together to solve problems or to create computational artifacts that satisfy those tasks. Excuse me. Speaking of those tasks, there are these two through course assessments. So again, explore is researching current issues in technology. So the fact that it's current is actually important. Students, I believe they can only use sources that were created within the last 3 or 6 months. So they can't go back and research something of interest to them if it was, you know, like Super Nintendo. That might be a little out of date. But they could talk about modern video game systems. They could talk about what's going on in the news. And generally, we encourage discussion of what's going on in tech news. And in one of the very first assignments, we recommend that students bookmark a number of major tech news sites, just so they're familiar with, and they start seeing this language, and they can start incorporating it into their vocabulary and talk about it both inside and outside the classroom with anybody who wants to have that conversation. Explore overall is worth 16% of the overall AP score. So this course is sort of unique. A lot of AP exam, or a lot of AP courses end with an exam, where the exam is 100% of the score. Before this, the only real other one was Studio Art, where you assembled a portfolio of artwork and you submitted the whole portfolio. There's also now a course called AP Capstone that has similar intermediate objectives, and students complete several isolated assignments, and all together they have these three pre-assignments, and then the larger overall work gets submitted, and that corpus is considered the entire AP score. So similar for this, are these two three-course assessments part of the student's overall AP score? So Explore is worth 16%, and then Create, which is the programming exercise we talked about a few times, is worth 24% of the student's overall score. And then lastly, there's the AP exam, which is, again, going to be held in May 5th, 2017. It's worth 60% of the overall score. It's 76 multiple choice questions, so there's no free answers on this. All of the longer form work has already been completed before they sit down to this test. It's 2 hours, multiple choice, language agnostic. There is a, now that we finally have a more lengthy definition that's part of this this new purple book, we only had a couple of examples of how they would do this language neutral pseudocode style language. Now we have a more concrete example of it. We can also modify the content on the CS50 AP wiki or whatever it migrates into to also provide students with, like, here's a Scratch implementation of this, here's a C implementation of this, here's how you might see this in the AP exam, sort of just to give them the head start that this is something to encounter. Now that we finally have a more concrete definition of it, we will be including it, we will be integrating it more into classroom. We'll be integrating more into classroom discussion or modules, so that students are not blindsided by seeing this for the first time.
So we're going to explicitly show them in class what the format.
What this language looks like, yeah, because we hadn't seen it before. We'd only seen one or two examples of a loop, but now they have a much broader definition of it in this purple book, and so now we can begin the process of actually calling that out. The AP exam covers 6 of the 7 big ideas. It doesn't cover creativity, but it covers the other 6. It spends about 20% of its time each on algorithms and programming, which is why, we give these two a lot of attention in the course, because they're pretty important on the AP exam. About 18% of the questions will cover abstraction and data, and about 12% each will cover the internet and the global impact that computers have had on the way we perceive information and data. So that's the CS Principles curriculum framework at a high level. And now I want to talk about how we approach that through CS50 AP. So the CS50 AP curriculum has 9 units, and I'll go through all in a second. Each unit has video resources for teachers and for students, written resources, suggested in-class exercises, a set of problems associated with it, and lots more, all of which we discussed earlier in terms of things you can find on cs50.tv, thought questions. Every module that you'll find on the wiki has a breakout of literally everything we can cull together that we have, plus, as I mentioned, that mapping of how we perceive this lining up with the APCSP framework, and soon again also the CSTA standards and CTE standards once we have those fully available to put on there. As you saw, we have about 50 different problems for students to tackle over the course of the 36 weeks. You're not required, of course, to use all of them or any of them if you want to write your own. You can pick and choose the ones that are most interesting to you or the most interesting to your students. Many of them are offered in multiple variations, so we call them hacker editions and standard editions. We make it very clear at the beginning of the term that all students are expected to complete the standard edition. That is what you need to do well in this course. But if you have prior background or you want to tackle this more technically, a lot of our assignments are offered as hacker editions. And so the canonical example here is around the first third of the course, we would introduce Caesar Cipher and Visionaire Cipher. When we're talking about the subject of encryption, and that would be the standard edition assignment. And in CS50 AP, it's 2 assignments, 1 for each of those algorithms. The hacker edition version would be to crack actual passwords using assault and using, like in Unix, etc password files. So they'll use brute force algorithms or dictionary attacks. In both cases, students are tackling the subject of encryption of data, but they're tackling it from very different perspectives. And so it keeps the material fresh for students who do have prior background, but it's not something that students who don't have prior background are required to do in order to do well in the class. And so hopefully that allows you to have students with very diverse backgrounds coming in and still having a really satisfying experience in the course. And then the final project, which maps the AP Create task, as well as the associated fair and other events that you tie to it, sort of is the capstone of CS50 AP. So what are these 9 units? So we start out with something that we don't talk about too much in CS50, and we've added a lot of this material for CS50 AP for students who come in and they have really no idea at all about computers. So we can't really get into the subject of programming if they don't know a lot about computers. So let's talk about computers and computing. So we have modules and discussions in the classroom of what does it mean to compute something? What does it mean to be a computer? Are we computers? Is an abacus a computer? So trying to figure out what that definition of a computer is, and just really having this discussion and getting students to bounce ideas off of one another. How do computers work? Taking them apart and looking at the insides of a computer and discussing what's actually happening. What's a bus? What's RAM? What are all these things I've heard, and how do they interplay to make that thing show up here? We talk about really fundamental low-level stuff, binary. What is a binary number? Zeros and ones. We have the discussion with binary bulbs that we saw this morning. ASCII, that first level abstraction up, so we can discuss letters. We start to introduce things like that. And algorithms. What is an algorithm? And get students to describe algorithms without using computer syntax, just using English language, sometimes to hilariously devastating effect in terms of making a sandwich, but also just in terms of, you know, having a good discussion about how do you brush your teeth, and seeing if you can describe that algorithmically. This unit generally covers these two big ideas, abstraction and algorithms. Next up, we go to building blocks of programming. So this is where we start to really begin our discussion of programming. And we do so first by introducing students to Scratch. And we're actually entertaining the idea, for those of you familiar, of switching to Snap. Snap is cool because it's HTML5, and so it doesn't require Flash, so it can be used on iPads and the like, or iPhones. So we talk about Scratch, so students can get the fundamentals of programming without getting mired in the syntax, which can be really intimidating at the beginning. But we do eventually want to get students outside of using a block-based language so that they are gaining exposure to what they will do in the real world. I think Casey had a funny comment yesterday about a student who asked her if drag and drop programming languages were what Microsoft engineers used in the real world. And was disheartened to find out that
no.
And so we want students to get exposure to those text-based languages so that they are able to do and know that they're doing the same things that professionals are doing, because they can. So we talk about Scratch, then we transition to pseudocode. So we begin to introduce low-level syntax with still using English terminology, but starting to organize it, indent things, and begin to simulate the structure of what a textual-based language looks like without actually introducing it to them, and then slowly introducing those elements piece by piece. Variables, how do we declare variables? How do we have a simple program that just does one thing with a variable and then is done? Loops and conditionals. So this unit really allows students to be creative. The Scratch project is extremely open-ended. Whatever you want to do, just make sure that you explore a couple different things. Make sure your program has a loop in it. Make sure your program has a variable. Make sure it has a conditional. Make some noise. Do something, explore the different things available to you, but be creative, do whatever you want. Make it a game, make it a drama. It doesn't have to be interactive, it just has to be yours. And of course, programming, is you're gonna see that word come up a lot on the rest of the slides as well. But just beginning to introduce students to this. And then from there, we start to put the blocks together and start to take those fundamentals of loops and conditionals and variables and start to combine them in interesting ways. So we introduce the concept of a subroutine, so abstractions, functions, arrays. How do we collect groups of information together? And how are we going to process that data? We have students discuss user interfaces. So we start to talk about what is a user experience like and distinguish between things like the command line interface that they can use in Cloud9 to type commands, as well as the graphical user interface that they have on the window to do exactly the same thing, and how these two things similar, and how are they different, and what other kinds of interfaces might we soon see. So talking about things like virtual reality, where you put on a set of goggles and you can go like this and hit a button because it's projected in front of you. That's a different kind of user interface. And then debugging. Everybody's favorite topic is debugging. We give students buggy programs and ask them to fix them. We talk about the different debugging strategies they might use, starting with things as simple as printing out the contents of things, but we also introduce students to GDB so they can do more intense debugging later on. When the problems get a little more complicated, they can learn how to freeze a program in the middle of its execution and start to pick it apart and sort of do You know, if they ever encounter a segmentation fault and they get a core dumped message, which nobody likes to get, but teaching them how to do sort of a digital autopsy on the core that gets dumped, and so they can see where their program might have gone wrong. So giving them that toolbox of information to begin to get comfortable with the idea of debugging and showing them that we as programmers, who've been doing this for a while, we make mistakes too. So even just things as simple as getting up in front of the classroom and coding something completely cold and making mistakes and showing them it's okay to make mistakes. It's not a mistake. It's a learning experience. You're not failing by making a mistake. You're learning how to avoid it the next time. Next, we go to thinking computationally. So this is where we talk a lot about algorithms and abstractions. We talk about various sorting and searching algorithms and ask students to compare how efficient things are. So we show them bubble sort and selection sort and insertion sort and show how they all look really, really different, but at the end of the day, they're all equally as bad in the worst case. And it's sort of an eye-opening moment when they see, well, these three things, and you know, we can do it. We do it in the classroom by having students line up holding numbers, and we physically move them around, and we show the way that this sort takes place. And then when they realize that it all boils down to the same thing, it's like there's got to be a better way. And then later on, we introduce a better way to do it. But just sort of having that ability to parse how it is the same.
Do you actually have them code all of those, or do you stick with just understanding?
There is an assignment where we do have students code all of them. It's called the sort race, and they try and run all of them at the same time to see when things, which one is faster, and realize that not everything always runs in the worst case.
They have to write the code?
They do in that assignment, yes. But we also have, for example, in study.cs50.net, we have partial code completed for them where they have to complete it. And we share the algorithms in pseudocode. So they can code them all, but they don't have to if that's not an assignment that you want to choose. But just being able to understand and describe the algorithm is generally enough. In general, they should probably know how to do one of them in case it comes up in an assignment. But they certainly don't have to do all three. It also asks the questions, can a computer solve any problem? So this is an interesting one that we haven't really talked about too much in CS50, but the curriculum framework actually does require is, how do we deal with unsolvable problems? Can a computer solve everything? This is sort of an interesting topic to try and discuss, like how to prove the negative. We talk about halting. Talk about the halting problem. Will a computer know whether or not a given input will crash it? Will it run over a particular period of time? Will it ever be able to make that determination? Or talking about stupid sort. So stupid sort is a sorting algorithm that randomizes an array and then determines whether or not it's in order. If that's the algorithm being used to determine your sort, is that computer ever necessary? Is that algorithm ever going to stop running? Can the computer ever, using stupid sort, sort an array? Maybe not. If it's completely random, it could run forever. And so just being able to describe, and students don't have to come up with answers to what is an unsolvable problem, but they should understand that unsolvable problems exist. And if they see it, hopefully be able to begin the process of understanding why that problem might never actually be solved. Next up, we talk about design, elegance, and efficiency. And I find that this unit a lot of fun when we teach it in CS50, or this portion of the course, because it's an opportunity to discuss images and doing digital manipulations. So again, those of you who are familiar with Thriving in a Digital World, you know they have a lot of the code.org does too with their image manipulation tools. It's a lot of fun to tinker with images. And so we have problems that deal with secret images, and we have problems where we have a broken SD card where students have to recover images off of this broken SD card. And my favorite story, and a couple of you heard me say this yesterday, is several years ago I had a student over Christmas break after CS50 had finished for the semester who emailed me and said, my sister got a digital camera for Christmas and she took a bunch of pictures and the card was corrupted and she was really upset because she couldn't get all of her images back. So I researched how to do create a card.raw, and I put the thing into my computer and I created a card.raw, and I used the program that I wrote to save all of my sister's images. And that's like really cool. Like that's a real world application of something that a student has created. And so we task students to replicate that experience and to perform digital forensics on images and try and figure out the secret image hidden inside of something and just learning what a pixel is. And we are then through teaching students about what a pixel is and how it's composed of a red part, a green part, and a blue part, we can talk about a structure and how a single unit of data might consist of multiple parts, and that's another abstraction that we can build upon from there. Next, we talk about managing data. So in this topic, in this unit, we talk about stacks, queues, linked lists, more complex programming tools. But this unit is, we would consider it to be one of the more optional units. This is one of our units that goes above and beyond the CS Principles curriculum framework. This is a unit that will really serve students well getting ready for CSA, but it's not worth getting stuck in if you're pressed for time. It goes above and beyond. So we think it's a worthwhile thing to include. It's part of the natural flow of the way we would do things, but do know that if you get to this, if you get to January or February and you find yourself just getting here, it's not like you have to slog through it and then race at the very end to consider internet and global impact. So if you have students who are, again, maybe that standard edition, hacker edition, or less comfortable, more comfortable divide, maybe your more comfy students start to progress through this stuff sort of on an independent study track. And maybe the rest of the course will skip this unit as well as the next unit, which, again, both dive into more high-level advanced material that we present to be a well-rounded picture, but is not required for CS principles. So developer toolbox is another one of those units that covers more advanced topics. So we talk about how to create your own abstractions, so things like how to write an API, how to compress data using various compression techniques, LZW and Huffman coding, how to make information smaller and be able to recover it all, the difference between lossy and lossless compression, how to write systems that scale well. When you throw bigger and bigger sets of data at it, can you begin to manage that load? So this is another unit that is not necessary for CS principles, but is presented to you and offered to you as an opportunity to pursue more advanced topics if time permits. Back to units that would be considered core and fundamental. Networking and the internet is unit 7. In this unit, we talk about internet technologies. So what is HTTP? What is IP? How do computers communicate? What is a router? How does routing work? And what about things like, I said, DDoS attacks? Or what does cybersecurity entail? What does cyber attacks entail? And this is where we really begin to pivot a lot towards the discussion of how the internet has changed things and the global impact that things like cyber attacks and the way the internet is built and how it has scaled over time. This is the point where we begin to have that discussion a lot more about global impact.
Internet of Things, maybe?
Internet of Things, absolutely. And I think we actually have several seminars as well on the Internet of Things and how basically everything is becoming a computing device. Is anybody familiar with, because it just made me think of this, is anybody familiar with makey-makey kits? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I saw one where people turn bananas into a keyboard. It's just things like that and how we have created these abstractions that allow us to turn anything into an internet-connected device. And then the last unit is problem solving for a global society. So this is where we pretty much have left C behind at this point, and we begin to talk about what comes next. So we introduce many programming languages all at once: PHP, JavaScript, SQL, CSS, HTML. And we don't nearly go into the same level that we did in C because we just spent the previous 7 units doing it, so we only have 1 here. So it's not necessarily about giving students a complete picture of PHP the same way we gave them a complete or roughly complete picture of C. It's about showing them that the things they learned already can be extrapolated to other languages, and how that now that they have this fundamental knowledge, they can exponentially expand upon it and pursue anything of interest to them because they already know these fundamental syntax. So PHP and JavaScript deliberately chosen because they're syntactically very similar to C, and they allow these really big leaps in terms of what your programs can do. All of a sudden you now have internet-connected programs where you can collect data via the web. And you could do that in C, but that would be really ew. And then we talk about problems faced by modern computer scientists, which again is going to come back to the subject of scalability. And it's really, this unit is very news dependent. There's always tech news going on, and it's really the big story. So right now, obviously, the one that keeps coming to mind is Apple FBI. Like, that's something we've talked about in the course, And now we talk about it at a higher level and how to deal with these things on a more macro level. And so we talk about programming again. There's a lot of programming here. Students can build some cool internet sites. They build a mock E-Trade website where they can buy and sell stocks in real time. And they learn to work with databases. And so they this unit gives them the fundamentals to create a really strong web-based final project, is really sort of what this is about. And because we're talking about problems that are being faced in the real world, it gets them thinking about what problem might I want to solve in my own final project to make my world a better place. So those are the 9 units of the course. And here's sort of a recommended pacing guide. This is what we say this should roughly take. And this is going to vary very much by classroom. We totally understand. But when we think about how much time we spend on these things in CS50 and then extrapolating that into a 39-week or 36-week, excuse me, high school course, this is roughly where things end up. And maybe sometimes your course will take a little longer in some units, and maybe sometimes it'll go a little shorter in others, and that's totally okay. But this is sort of how we've roughly landed on the 36-week timeline. This is, in the low end, this would be 29, which would leave you with a lot of time for follow-up and more in-class discussion. At the high end, this is 38. But as I mentioned, these 2 units, 5 and 6, are they are optional units, and so they can be taken out without really any harm to the students in terms of computer science principles. And if time permits, you can double back and go back into C as well. Yes, hold.
I'm just wondering about the required amount of time to work on those 2.
Factored in.
Yeah,
so the explore task is built in at the end of unit 4 as an assignment. And the create task is built in at the end of unit 8 as an assignment. Yep. So that time is already built in as part of those units. Yes?
When you say 2 to 3 weeks, how much time per week per up as far as hours?
We are assuming 3 hours. It's 180 in-class minutes. So that should be 4 periods of 45 minutes. Yeah, 3 hours of in-class time per week. So that's assuming an average from what we've collected from our pilot teachers of 4 periods of 45 minutes per week. Okay. Questions on this stuff? That's sort of that's my wrap up on it. Yeah, so I'm happy to discuss anything that you want to talk about it.
I'm wondering about homework time in addition to that, if you've given any thought to that.
So the assignments that we do at CS50 as problem sets. We expect to take 15 to 20 hours.
Each problem set,
which is comprised of multiple problems for AP purposes. The way that we've structured them now is to try and time them at 4 to 5 hours on average for the most part. Some of the early ones will be much shorter. Some of the long ones might take a little longer than that. Because it's an AP class, we do feel pretty comfortable about there being a decent expectation of homework. I know for some students that's not the easiest thing to do.
Are you talking about 4 to 5 hours per unit? You're talking about 15 to 20 hours per unit? I don't understand where these numbers
work. So 4 hours per problem, programming problem. Yeah. And there are various numbers there are different numbers of problems per unit.
Okay.
And if you, I didn't want to break it out here, but CS50 Wiki has the breakdown of, so for example, unit 0 has 3 problems in it. Unit 1 has 10, but they're all very small to sort of like, it's a programming problem about loops. It's a programming problem about conditionals.
So would it be fair to say it's in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 hours a week? That's not far off.
That's what I've endeavored to, in terms of a homework expectation, and that also may include some in-class time, depending on whether your classroom is flipped or whether you're doing things live. But that was the expectation I had. Yes.
So you had talked about this, the mock E-Trade, the CS50 finances being maybe the foundation of creating an internet-based problem. Now, final project of the create task for CSP, can they, because that starts with distribution code, right? So, and then that could be used to actually expand that and to create something else from it. Would something like that be acceptable for a,
So with later assignments, there's a lot of distribution code that we will include to get students started so they don't have to do certain aspects of it. We want them to solve. So for example, the example I'm thinking of right now is the game of 15. We provide the main logic of the game, but they have to write 4 subroutines that plug in at various points so that once those 4 subroutines are completed, the game works as intended. The CS principles create task requires this, the work to be primarily to entirely of the student's own creation. So to that end, that's a good point that there might be some issues with that if they decide they want to use the web framework that we prefer. So in that assignment, we provide students with some code that they enter their username and password for their database, and it does the database connecting for them. So they don't have to do things like SQL connect and pass in all the credentials. Whether that would be considered so fundamental to the assignment or whether it's ancillary work that a student would generally just look up that information anyway, that's a good question that I have to consider. I think I'd have to consider it further. And I'd want to review this new document to see how aggressively they would pursue a use of outside code. That's a good question. Yes?
Is it possible to assign more hours per week to complete this in fewer weeks?
Oh, absolutely. If you have...
Like 5 hours per week.
Yeah, and that's actually leads to a good... Side point here. So many teachers, we know of many teachers who are using parts of this curriculum because they don't get a full year. They only get the students for one semester. So they're teaching the first 5 units in one semester, and they'll teach the second 4 units the next semester. We strongly encourage that to happen if that's something that is required of you or an option available to you. This curriculum is laid out as if you have the 36 weeks with roughly 3 hours of in-class time. But that's not a reality that everybody has. So if you want to do it in 24 weeks and do assign more work, if that's something that you can that is manageable, of course. If you want to cover half the curriculum and split it over 2 years, that's okay too. In order to prepare students for the AP exam, it really should cover at least units 0 through 4 and 7 and 8. But if you want to teach the course as a non-AP course, which also may be the case, it's a good advanced topics or even introductory topics. Depending on how the Java course works at your school, it could be slotted before, it could be slotted after, it could be concurrent with. There's a lot of different ways to adapt this curriculum for what suits the needs in your school, and we're really committed to supporting those adaptations to the extent we can, so that once you create these alternative syllabi, for example, others can draw from the work that you've done and create iterations of the course as well. But yeah, absolutely. This is the recommended structure for the AP, to target an AP course, to AP exam at the end of the course. But there are certainly many different variations that could happen.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? There's lots more detail than what I'm talking about now on the wiki. The course right now is being rolled out just in time. We're at the end of nearing the end of our pilot year, and so the final units are not completely released yet. We're finishing the adaptation of our CS50 materials to those units, but the first 0 through 5 are finalized. I'm going to put a pin in 6 to jump to 7. In terms of my rollout, so over the coming weeks, you'll see the rest of that material flesh out. And there's a lot more detail there than I wanted to get into now, because I didn't want to put you all to sleep. But if there are any questions about anything, please let me know.
Suggested prerequisites for this class?
The only prerequisite that the College Board requires and that we would also require is algebra.
Just algebra.
Basic algebra, yeah. We don't require any more advanced math than that. It's a good question, though. But a very strong majority of students in our course have never taken a computer science course before. So there's no programming prerequisite. And because we've added this early unit, there's really even a lower barrier to entry in terms of computer familiarity. So I'm trying to make that on-ramp as easy as possible. Good question. Yes?
Can you suggest those books at the beginning of... Mm-hmm. Were those purely ancillary in terms of what the kids will be using them for, like for their own education of knowledge?
They're a reiteration of some of the things that we cover,
yeah.
Presented in a different way. And that's actually what a lot of our resources are, is the same material presented from 5 or 6 different approaches, to, so that hopefully one of them will connect with the student, because every student's going to learn a different way.
So homework per se wouldn't be read pages X to Y?
No, we have no required reading. It's everything that would be covered in such a reading is covered in other written forms from our lectures, our videos, or other resources we have available.
Now, the homework 4 to 5 hours a week, mm-hmm. worst case scenario, if you're doing 5 hours a week for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I got 190 hours of homework mm-hmm. in the course. That would be for solving the problems. Is that what you're like doing the programming?
Correct.
Okay, not like assigned reading or anything like that?
Correct.
Almost everything about the course outside of class is doing
programming.
Yeah,
pretty much. Okay.
Okay. Okay, well, let's take a little break.